I don't know about you, but it feels like a lot of my friends are now getting on that baby train. If you have a friend who is also expecting or have little ones still in diapers, I always recommend Pampers Swaddlers. With Pampers Swaddlers, you can also rest assured that this diaper will prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Swaddlers has dual leak guard barriers at the legs to help protect where leaks happen most, and they have a blowout barrier, which is an innovative back pocket built into the diaper to help prevent those messy leaks up the back. Did you know that on average, babies will use up to 8,000 plus diapers before becoming potty trained? That is a lot. That's why Pampers Diaper Stash is the hottest baby gift for 2024. So give a gift to a loved one that says, "We see you and we've got you." Pampers Diaper Stash is an online diaper fund that all parents with little ones will love. You can organize friends and family to contribute to a group gift of an online stockpile that never has to run out. Pampers Diaper Stash is great because it takes the guesswork out of choosing what size and how many diapers to gift. It's so easy to do, and it's the gift that always fits.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of ABG, Asian Boss Girl, a podcast for the modern day Asian American woman. My name is Helen.
I'm Janet.
And I'm Mel.
This episode is dedicated to our listeners. These past 6 or so weeks, we've been collecting a lot of feedback, questions, and comments from people. And I'm kind of surprised. There are some people from, like, New Zealand.
Yeah,
okay, I guess that's the only place because we both said New Zealand. But, like, people from the Midwest and a bunch of different places that are outside of LA. So we're happily surprised by that and glad that we're able to connect with a lot of people beyond our expectations of who we thought we would be connecting with. So thank you. We read every single message and might not have time to respond back, but we're going to take this episode to do that now.
And we actually just put out a story on our Instagram. If you don't follow us yet, please do, at Asian Boss Girl. And we wanted to know if there's any random questions that you have. We've gotten some serious ones, but what about some, like, let's kick it off with, like, a fun one.
All right, so I pulled up Instagram. We got Clarissa May and Camille Carpe Diem. Carpe Diem was her
IG. Damn.
Damn, Camille. They asked us, how'd y'all meet?
How did
Who
we
wants
meet?
To start?
Okay, well.
Oh, no.
I guess I'll start. I met Helen first. I met Helen when I was still interning at Wong Fu Productions at an event after work. And I kind of knew you just sort of as, oh, this is a friend of a friend, right? I wasn't really close with her. But I knew through, like, different interactions of going out, I'm like, man, this girl, she's on my level. But I haven't really connected with her.
She would pass the Vegas test.
She would totally pass the test. But I was too shy to ask her out as a friend.
To be honest.
I know. And it was really random. So I remember one time, I was in this phase of my life where I was thinking, I need to, like, branch out and make new friends. Who can I reach out to that I really haven't talked to and I think I'll connect with? And I texted Helen randomly. I was like, hey, it's Mel. Like, what are you doing tonight? It's Saturday.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. Okay. And so that night, actually, she's like, I'm actually going to downtown to this bar. Do you want to come out? And that night actually was the night I met my fuckboy. So it's funny how that all came about, right?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
And to this day, even though me and Helen are good friends now, on her phone, my name is Mel, Wong Fu intern.
Yeah.
I was like, can I graduate from that name now? It's been
a
while.
It's stuck. It doesn't change.
Sucks. But for Janet, actually, I was, like, talking to her. I was like, how did I meet you? I totally forgot. After I worked for Wong Fu, I started freelance producing. Yeah. And I was on a video shoot. And Janet came on to be, I guess, like, a extra?
It was like a mutual friend's music video.
Oh, for Dan.
For David.
For David,
David. You were there, too, actually.
Shout out to David Choi.
Thanks, David, for bringing us together. Dude, Helen, you were there, too, actually. We were doing a collaboration with Sony, and there was a shoot in downtown LA, and this, like, it's like a dinner kind of music video shoot thing. I had to pull up the video for you, but that's where I met Janet for the first time. My other producer, who's also our mutual friend, who was also a producer on this podcast, was like, oh, this is Janet, blah blah blah, and she was really sweet. And actually, on that shoot, one of our crew members was trying to hit on Janet, and so I'm trying to get information from her.
I want, like, names right now.
I can't put him on blast.
Okay, fine.
He was trying to holler, And that's how I met Janet.
And were you like, I want her number too? Like, I want to ask her out too?
I think I was probably like hitting on her for him. So that's how I met Janet. And then also like, I mean, we go to annual Vegas trips. So like, it's obviously with Janet that just kind of, you know.
Got to, But I do remember meeting Mel for the first time. And you were so sweet and so bubbly and just very like, because I didn't know very many people there. I knew like David and then our friend Eric. Yeah. And you were just so like welcoming and friendly and positive. And I had a very similar impression with Helen, actually. So I know Helen through, I went to college with her boo. So, and so I'm the first time I met you, I think we were going out for a mutual friend's birthday clubbing in LA.
Of course.
And that's, you were, how I met both of you guys.
Shoot. A common theme there.
But yeah, you were also just so nice with, and just like big smile on your face and people that you don't know, but you were just like hugging and saying like, welcome, come party with us. So that's, that was my memory of.
Well, you guys already told me my memories on YouTube, so.
You know, one thing I have to say, though, like, I think one reason all three of us just gradually clicked is we, all three of us on the same wavelength when we go out.
Yeah. Actually, how we started this podcast was after going out one night. Not saying that that's all we do,
but we work.
I think it was, it was a Friday night. Mm-hmm. We went out drinking. We came back, and we were talking and talking, and we were like,
maybe we should just
do this,
this podcast, like put our conversations on blast on a podcast and have other people listen in.
Yep.
And that's why we're here now. So that's how we all met. And now we're here.
Now we're here. Second question.
All right. So our next question is from Kim. She goes, workout details. Helen, how do I look so hot like you?
Oh my God.
Tell us your workout secrets, Helen.
Yeah.
Well, I've always been pretty athletic, I would say, since like high school. I did three sports. So I did crew, basketball, track, four, and volleyball.
Damn.
All different times. But volleyball is the one that I really stuck with, and now I run on occasion. But I'm trying to, so shout out to my one pull-up account.
Wow.
But I'm trying to get to a pull-up because I can't. And it feels very pathetic for myself, but I want to get there. So I've been focusing a lot more on weights. And what I realized from that is that weights actually slim you down a lot. So I know a lot of girls are like worried that if you do a lot of weightlifting, like you'll get really bulky and big. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, that's actually the opposite, where I'm getting more leaned out and just like the muscles are showing more, but then the fat's like going away faster.
Oh.
So that's actually been working out for me.
So you do more weight training.
So more weights. Yeah.
Like, what is the routine that you use for lifting weights?
So I do a lot of back, because for pull-ups, you do need back muscles. Mm. So I focus a lot on that, and also bicep. I use the pull-down machine a lot and just free weights.
Well, okay, I'm not going to lie. I stalk Helen, too. You have washboard abs. Sorry. Can I bring my laundry over later, actually?
No, that's definitely, like, very not, like, all the time. Okay, trust me. Sometimes I look in the mirror, I'm like, belly.
Wait, lift up your shirt. Lift up your shirt. Let me see.
What? No, I'm not going to lift up my shirt.
But you do a lot of ab workouts, though. That's what I'm saying.
Yes. I do a lot of Cassie Ho's Blogilates, her ab workouts. They're really, really good. And she's also an Asian boss female out there doing her thing. Mm-hmm. She also has a podcast called Sheroic.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I do a lot of her ab workouts. And then I also did BBG workouts, which I know, Janet, you did that.
I tried for a little bit too, but I'm not much of a high intensity workout person. So I kind of just went back to running. But yeah, she had some really good ab routines.
Nice. I was looking into BBG. I just took notes about it.
You just watched her do the movement.
I was like, I saw this stuff. I was like, noted that for next workout, time. Yeah.
Mental workout.
Mental workout. I'm exhausted now.
But Janet also does a lot of working out too.
Mostly running. I feel like, I mean, I wanted to check out Pilates and stuff, but I just haven't really ventured yet. But I need to start changing up my routine because I'm getting bored.
Oh, okay.
So that's another tip for people, I think, that like mix it up a bit. Like Helen is saying, you play volleyball, you do weights, you do some of the programs like Blogilates or BBG. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the key, is just keeping it interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's go take a class, guys.
Oh, yeah. Didn't Janet want us to take a hip-hop dance class?
LA has a couple of hip or like dance / workout classes. Those are pretty fun, so maybe we should look into that.
I'm down.
Boxing classes?
I don't know.
I'm down for boxing. Boxing's fun. All right. You get a really good
workout. We're gonna do it, and Instagram stories.
Can we do a K-pop like workout routine? Moving on to our next question. I definitely want to direct this question to Janet. It's from Christine Marzon. I hope I'm saying that right. She says, what are your thoughts about an age gap between people dating? Since you do date, you know, like 40-year-old men, I feel like this question.
I'm 32, so if someone is near 40, that's not that big of an age gap.
How about like a 60-year-old man?
No, that's a little too far for
that's grandpa.
That's hairy that? Ears and hairy buttholes.
Ew, no, we're that's not. Not no.
She's over grooming. She's over that.
But in seriousness, I think in terms of age gap when it comes to dating, I think it depends more on the actual age. So if you're like 20 or like 18, 19 and you're dating someone who's like in their 30s, just because of where you are in life is really different. I think it's more challenging. Mm-hmm. But if you're, say, like 30 and 38, it might be easier to relate to each other's lives. In the end, I think it's like it's a person by person case. It's mm-hmm. also easier to share similar like humor and similar maybe like generational things when you're around the same age. But if you connect with someone and you guys are a different age, like I think it's totally fine. I don't know.
That makes sense.
But I also kind of, like I have a lot of friends that have married like people that are much older than them. I think because I'm around that, like I haven't seen any bad cases. Do you guys have any perspective on?
I agree. I think it depends on where you are in life. I think as you get older, the age gap doesn't seem as apparent mm-hmm. versus like, I'm 21, I'm dating a 35-year-old. Right. That's like, whoa, dude.
Yeah. Because I feel like goals are more aligned when you're past the 30 age.
Yes, I agree.
Right? Like before then, you just graduated from college and everyone's trying to figure out what they're going to do for the next 10 years or so. So everyone's like at a different stage at that point. But then after 30 is when everyone's more aligned in terms of like.
No, that's true. I think from like either an older sibling or like a parent perspective, if someone is in their early 20s and they have so much life to live, to develop, mm-hmm. You could be afraid that if their partner is much older that they're kind of just gonna like fold into that person and maybe not do the development that they need to.
So important.
Yeah. But I mean, I also think it's like different from person to person. I've like my younger cousin is in her 20s, but I feel like she's very mature. So, and she just married someone who's like 35, 36.
Oh, really?
So
mm-hmm. Nice. Okay, so one person named Tina, this kind of relates to our question. Yeah. Tina asks, Janet, where do you find these older men?
They're not that old.
I think she, you know what, Tina? I actually think she goes to the senior center.
Oh, ew.
And she volunteers her time. And she walks
That's
in with.
That's what you're doing tomorrow.
No. That's why you can't come out tonight, huh?
No, I mean, no, but seriously, like, I'm not that young. I'm, like, in my almost mid-30s now. So if I'm meeting someone who's, like, late 30s, early 40s, it's just through. Sometimes it's through, like, friends. But I also use like dating apps and stuff. So
question.
Yeah.
How old do you set your age requirement for on the dating app? Like what's the oldest
max age?
Yeah.
70.
Oh, sorry.
42.
42. That's very specific.
Wait, that's 10 years older.
10 years older than
you. Do 10 years older.
Yeah. Yeah,
I would probably do that too.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And I set the minimum
at was your cougar male, -2?
-10. I'm just kidding. Dude, that's 60. Ew, no. Not just kidding. I'm not. No, no, no.
Yeah, so that's a good question. Yeah, 10? I set it at 42.
So what's your minimum then?
I set it at my age, 32.
You won't go younger.
Oh. I did. So I did actually. I was like, I'm going to be open-minded and open it up to like 30. But then I noticed that as I'm swiping, I still like I'm biased and I will likely not like, yeah, match with someone who's younger than me.
But like you were just saying, after 30, usually people are more aligned and the age difference doesn't really matter as much.
That's true. But I still think that generally women mature a little bit more quickly than men. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that that's completely true for every case, but generally. And when I've met guys who are in their early 30s, I feel like it's still, I don't know. I would like someone who's in their older 30s.
Okay.
Sorry, boys.
Sorry, dudes.
Don't Hi. DM us or Janet.
Unless you're 40. All right. So should we move on to our next question?
All right, so T-Not, I like your blue hair and your choker.
Cool.
So question for Mel. Do you ever feel FOMO when you decline activities with your friends? When I decline them, I'm worried I won't be asked out again.
Ooh, that's a very good question. Oh, man. I definitely feel a little bit of FOMO, to be honest. But I think it just depends on where you, like how you feel physically. I think I mentioned in episode 9 for work-life balance. Mm-hmm. If I'm really tired, like, I'm going to be miserable if I go out. And I need that time to myself to be like, you know what? I'm going to decline. I think just if you're afraid of people not inviting you out, I think balancing, like, maybe going out 1 week and not going out the other week. Or just go out one day of the week. That way they could see your face. And mm-hmm. your friends know that you know they still matter to you.
Yeah.
So finding that balance.
I feel like you get dropped, quote unquote, mm-hmm. if you don't show up consistently.
No, exactly.
So if you find time with them to either grab coffee or dinner or lunch, you're still in their lives. And that's when they don't forget about you.
Yeah. Right. Also, another thing that I noticed that really helps me is just keeping communication open. Like, just because I'm not going out this weekend doesn't mean I could still text you and maintain that relationship with you. I know with us, we have a group text that we always talk about. We always talk in every day.
Right.
So even though I don't see you guys every day, we talk every day, and that makes us okay.
Yeah, I think definitely. And checking in with people through phone calls, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't, it takes less time, but it shows them that you still care and that you guys are still keeping updated with each other.
Those were all from our Instagram stories from the past like hour or so. And we have a lot of questions submitted through our website as well as direct email. Some of them from our website, we are going to combine these into sort of two overall topics where it's about work and then expectations on being Asian in America. But starting off with work environments. So shout out to Samantha Chung,
yes,
one
Samantha.
Of my Boston home friends.
Nice.
So Samantha says, I know you probably will cover working with all men. But how about working with all women? Personally, I feel like sometimes there is way too much drama and petty fights, and I am not able to move up or grow in that environment. However, it's also amazing to see women in higher exec positions. What do you guys think? Do you guys work with a lot of women?
I think Mel can speak to this pretty well, right? You work in fashion tech.
Mm-hmm. I definitely work with a lot of different women in my company. Not all women are like this at where I work. I think people assume that if there's a lot of women, all women are petty. That's not the case. I do have some people here and there that I interact with that I do encounter some pettiness sometimes. But whenever I encounter these type of situations, I think my mentality is just to end it right then. You know, this is a professional setting. I'm going to go about things in a professional way. It is natural, or it is easy for you to just kind of give into pettiness and kind of
be triggered by it or... Perpetuate
pettiness. And I feel like it's an ongoing cycle versus if you end it now, I could cut it off when I can.
Mm-hmm. So being the bigger person and seeing it for what it is when it does come to you.
Exactly. And I think even with work, I notice is if you put in the work and you do a good job, like doing you and good work and being a good person, your higher ups will see it. You don't need to act a certain way or be petty, because I think that behavior is also noticed in a work environment.
Do you think the quote-unquote pettiness happens because you feel comfortable with each other to talk about personal things?
Yes and no.
Like, to your point about keeping things professional is kind of a nice way to have those boundaries?
Yes, I think so.
Interesting. That's actually, so for my field of work, it's super professional.
Yeah.
We aren't like that close between me and the other women, and there aren't a lot of women in my team either.
Mm-hmm.
But for the women that are there, I do actually see them as more like strong figures. Like, most of them have children.
Mm-hmm.
And I see them sort of paving the way for other women in the group by saying like, I need to have certain hours and I can't be on certain calls at certain times. And I guess in the past like 5 years or so, I've just seen this like wave of women kind of get promoted and get into higher level positions. And because they are sort of taking that initiative to be like, I need this, I'm like, oh, you're paving the way for other women in a group. So I don't see a lot of that pettiness, because to Jana's point, there is a lot of professionalism that is maintained within my team. So it's like a weird balance between like friendship, and especially when it comes to like non-financial industries.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about like how that actually works. Like, people who drink beer at work and like do all this fun stuff, I don't get any of that.
It's hard because I like, even for my work, where I see pettiness or unprofessionalism cross is when like you're critiquing like something, and then sometimes like you could get butthurt over a critique. Because like, you know, oh, I thought we were friends. Why did you say it? Why'd you say that? And I think that's where lines get blurred, and that's when problems arise.
Right.
Right, right.
But I think just keep in mind, like, this is a professional setting. And if you tell me, hey, I didn't like this because A, B, and C versus like, that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way to go about communicating things to make sure everything is professional.
Right, right.
I guess for me, there was one person in Boston who was like a senior manager, super like petty and mean aggressive. She's like the queen bee, the original definition of queen bee, by putting other women down in order to empower herself. But I also kind of caught myself in thinking like, oh, is she a queen bee or is she just a strong, kind of like a strong, like a man could have had that position too. And you just see him as like a powerful asshole versus like a petty female trying to take down other women, right? But it's like the same qualities that they're both exuding. So it's like kind of a weird balance to say, is it really pettiness or is it just how society makes us see women?
I also think it might be, from my personal experience, I see more of a personality thing than a gender thing, because like your examples of someone who might be petty, I've known male coworkers a little bit more gossipy than female coworkers.
Yeah,
if they're just that personality, they like to know what's happening and they get more personal and they like will chit chat on the side. in terms of working with all women, I work in tech, and my design team and our specific specialization in design, we were actually, it was like three girls. And I felt like we were really like probably all of the opposite of the stereotypes.
Oh, that's good.
And maybe it was just the personality types, or I'm not sure what it is that made it work, but we were just very communicative and open and supportive. Mm-hmm. And I think also because our environment was not competitive. It was very like flat, even though some, like one of the women was like 10 years more experienced or something. It was just, she never treated it like she had extra power. And it was always more about like trying to engage us and supporting and helping us. So I'm not sure.
So I guess that's our different experiences with having women in different industries.
So, I mean, I guess as you can see that we're, you know, this topic is pretty large and we'll probably, we can come back to it at a later time. But this is our just kind of quick two cents.
Mm-hmm. Quick.
Or long-ish.
It's a quick quarter.
Sam also had asked, what about for pushing for promotions or a job raise? Do we have any tips or experiences on that?
Ooh, I just realized, so me and my manager, she does a good job of asking me, what is your goal for like our next round of promotions? So if I tell her like, what do I need to do to get promoted? And she's very open with me, then we already have that goal like lined out and written up, and I can work towards that versus it's ambiguous.
Right.
So being really open with your manager really helps me.
And I think that's actually how companies are, they realize that you need to set a clear path for whoever to like, here's your path for promotion. These are your goals for this year. And that's the same with my company. Like we sit down with our counselors who are also there to help us along the way. Like if you want to be promoted to manager, you have to hit certain sales targets or certain projects, get experience, client interaction, all of that. And so knowing what is coming up, I think that already helps with getting promoted, like knowing that it's kind of in the bag if I checked off these boxes.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would say a lot of companies nowadays, they do provide the structure. So you have like annual reviews or biannual. And Mel, to your point, being very specific about what do I need to do to get promoted? And then if you work towards those things, it doesn't really give the other person very much reason to not promote you.
Right.
I would say for job raises, you know, in addition to having kind of what are the typical salaries and the typical like years of experience, it's really helpful to have people who advocate for you. And that means like doing well on a project and having one person who really understands the value that you bring and so that they can push and support the promotion or push and support the job raise. In terms of being able to defend like what your salary should be, especially if you're like changing jobs, when I like switched industries and switched functions, it was challenging because I was a new person in that industry, but I had a lot of previous work experience in other industries. So it was being able to have like specific examples of things I've done in the past from previous jobs and what that pay is, and then being able to translate. So like Helen was saying, like being your own biggest advocate, doing your research and knowing, as long as you can defend, usually companies have a hard time
saying no.
Yeah.
That's good advice, Janet.
So a lot of our listeners have commented about feeling lonely or different. A lot of identity crisis topics. So if you think about Asians in America, most of us are first, second generation Asian Americans. For us three, our parents had come from Asia. So a lot of people are going through, you know, are we Asian? Are we American? It's a very hyphenated world. And so trying to figure all of that out, we realize a lot of our listeners have questions on this.
Around that topic, yeah. So Mina Sue, she asks, do you think there is a correct way to be Asian American? Are there standards that have to be met to be considered both Asian and American? I mean, I think this is a really good question. And for me personally, the perspectives that I think is important to bring that I can offer is I grew up in, or I guess we all kind of grew up in like neighborhoods that had non-Asian cultural backgrounds, right? So for me, it was a more Caucasian heavy. And I always felt like I was maybe different. But then when I went to college and I was around a lot of Asian Americans, I felt like I wasn't Asian enough. So to your question about like what is Asian enough and what is American enough, I definitely feel that same like struggle of trying to figure out that balance or what the levels are. And I think the answer is there isn't really a correct way. It's whatever way is comfortable for you and is where you can feel like you have a sense of community with the people around you. I don't know. What do you ladies think?
For me, I grew up in a very large metropolis city. I grew up in Boston. So there's definitely more diversity there than, say, in the Midwest. So I would say that I was lucky to have people around me that were also Asian that I could identify with. But I think the struggle of growing up in America is that you're in a world where media that gets pushes onto you, there's not a lot of Asian faces there, right? So you don't see a lot of representation at that level. So you can connect with your friends, but in terms of like overall like white America, that support's not really there. That's kind of my upbringing or my childhood is what I can recall.
I don't think there's a correct way to be Asian American. It's what you're comfortable with. But I do have to say, I did notice in college that a lot of friends were international students, but they went to international school in, say, Taiwan. But coming, so in Taiwan, they felt more Asian American, right? But coming here, they're defined as too Asian.
Right.
So there's always this constant struggle, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like there's really no clear definition of what is correct.
Yeah, and I don't think there is. And like I was saying, that there's no, like, there's not a lot of examples for us to say what is correct and who has led the best Asian American life out there.
Yeah, that's true.
I think, I mean, I guess that the one takeaway is that the fact that we're asked, or that people ask this, these questions to themselves, is that it's a very shared experience. That most people, they question, am I being Asian enough? Am I being American enough? So know that other people think that it's like a really prevalent thing. So, you know, there isn't really a correct way. It's just whatever you feel.
I remember when I was a freshman in college, me and my roommate, my best friend, we were like, we're not going to join any Asian clubs. We're going to only hang out with white people.
Oh, really?
I remember saying that because we didn't want to be like stereotyped like, oh, they're just part of that Asian.
Right.
They're those type of girls, right? Like, we don't really want to hang out with them. So we only hung out with like our floor and tried to avoid all the Asian student organizations at the like student activities days.
Oh, yeah.
But then we ended up becoming, I was the president of Chinese Student Association my senior year, and she was the vice president of Asian Caucus. So it's like, over time, I think we just gravitated towards people that had similar like experiences and background. Yeah. And we're like, oh, you like to drink Hennessy too?
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah, so I mean, I think there isn't really a correct way to be one or the other. But the nice thing is that you have kind of a mixed background to pull from, right? So be like, leaning into that and be proud if that's what, that you have like an extra culture to explore.
I'm not gonna lie though, I get very heated when people are like self-hating Asians.
Oh yeah.
I get super, I sweat. Like,
I think, Helen, to your example, like, why do people do that, right? It's because they feel somehow ostracized, or that celebrating that part is going to mean a negative experience for them in some way.
Yeah, and I mean, I was a self-hating Asian too my freshman year, right? And I think the reason for that is really also because, like, if you think about your parents coming over to America, right, their whole purpose is to assimilate into this new culture, so that they are not sticking out like a sore thumb. And so they're going to want to put you into those experiences where they're going to try and Americanize you as much as they can.
The goal is to fit in.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I think that might have been my mentality growing up also, even though no matter what, like, she's an Asian mom and I've gone through all the traditions, experiences, learning the language and all of that. But I think there's a level of assimilation into American culture that a lot of us as Asian Americans, first, second, third generation, we're still trying to just fit into this world that we've been born into.
Yeah, you know, actually, I can relate to, I think growing up, I definitely felt there was this like focus on trying to fit in. And then as I got older, I kind of regret not going to Chinese school and it's when you get a little bit older and you realize that the having a kind of like an alternative cultural background is a great benefit. So, I mean, I guess all of that, the kind of summary takeaway is that it's a great blessing and a benefit to have multiple cultures to pull from. And there isn't, you don't have to be enough of one or the other. It's whatever you're comfortable with. Just do you, I guess.
And it's difficult, but at the same time, you create your own story, and someone coming after you, the next generation, will see your story and be like, oh, that seems like me, and I feel more comfortable living here.
Yeah. Thanks so much for that question, Mina.
All right, so Helen mentioned earlier that she felt like a lack of representation for Asian American women through media. We got a question from Jackie. She said, as an Asian American myself, I never really had people I can feel like I can relate to. I used to notice that most Asian women on movies and TV were as American as possible or as Asian as possible. Or I see glamour girls on YouTube channels who rely on fans to survive. While that's all good and well, I seriously appreciate listening to you all, keeping it very real and down to earth. I look forward to your future podcasts. That's so sweet, Jackie. Honestly, I think the real reason why we started this podcast is we felt like our voice in the corporate, or I guess, quote unquote, normal Asian American working 9-to-5 jobs, that voice was missing. So, you know, for us, this podcast was our way to represent those women out there and share our stories.
So thank you for reaffirming our goal, Jackie, or like our focus.
Olivia Duong also had a comment here about how she was born and raised in Michigan, and she moved to the Bay Area and experienced a huge culture shock in terms of Asian community. A lot of people don't even realize that there are Asian people outside of California. Which is true. And I think for us, this is one way to kind of just try and connect with people mm-hmm. and kind of give them, even if you live in the Midwest, here is a platform for us to be able to just talk into these mics and someone from the Midwest can hear it and feel connected with people like us. And funny thing is, we feel connected to people who are giving us these comments as well. I never really connected with anyone in the Midwest. I've never been in the Midwest, so I never knew that, you know, there could be a connection there.
That's so true.
Yeah. So it's kind of nice to read these.
Thanks, Olivia.
You should start your own podcast too, Olivia. Share with us what it's like being raised in Michigan as an Asian American. So those were some really great questions, but a little heavier questions. Let's move on to some fun ones. Mel, do you have one that you want to read off?
All right, so one question we got, it's from, it's Joellen? She says, describe each other as fruits. So what do you think Janet is as a fruit?
Well, Janet's very, she's very earthy. Mm-hmm. She's very like green and she likes the outdoors.
Oh, she's a coconut.
I was just thinking coconut.
Dude, she's a coconut.
You're saying that with like much affirmation. You are a coconut.
You're a coconut and that's just what it is. So Janet's a coconut.
I'm okay with that. I love coconut water.
She's like sweet. Oh, it's also
really
like,
good for you.
Well, yes, that. And also a lot of like hair products and whatnot associate coconut with
being very natural.
Very organic.
Yeah.
Totally Janet. Wow. You are a coconut. I can't unsee that.
You guys carried that metaphor pretty well. That was good.
No, we try.
If Mel were a fruit, she would be, what do you think, Janet?
Well, I thought maybe like a kiwi, something that's like a little spunky.
Hairy.
A little spunky, a little, not tropical, but
soury. Like,
excuse me? What the fuck, dude? I'm sounding like a rotten fruit now.
Who would Helen be? I always think of the peach emoji. Because
her ass.
Oh my God.
You're really into
butt. The fuzzy ass.
Butt workout.
Fuzzy ass. Is that what you said?
I don't know. No, but she's fiery, though.
You're a dragon fruit.
I'm a dragon fruit?
Dude, yeah. I think so. You get different layers, but when you open it up, it's like, damn.
White on the inside?
Wait, what color is dragon fruit actually on the inside?
It's white on the inside and like with seeds.
With seeds, yeah.
Honestly, I feel like I should be described as a vegetable, not a fruit.
Or a dumpling.
Or, you know, that works too.
Mel, every time she doesn't have makeup on, she's like, Helen, I look like a mandu. Which is a dumpling in a Korean.
Or I look like a potato. All of you guys, I look like a potato right now.
You do not look like a
potato. Like a burnt one. I'm so red right now.
Just kind of contour, you know?
Yeah, we learned that. I don't know how to do that.
Okay, so we just got one from Butterfly. Can y'all discuss about women's hair loss problem, especially for Asian women due to genetics? And do you mind if your guy is bald? And then she has the sweat drop like, on the face emoji.
Hair loss.
Hmm.
To be honest, I can't really relate to that question because I have too much hair on my head. No, literally, I'm the type of girl, whenever I wash my hair,
you lose a lot of
I
hair.
Get like, yeah, my yeah. drain is like clogged.
Yeah,
actually, it's funny. I have a group chat with my cousins, my two cousins and my sister, all around the same age. And my cousin just sent me a picture of her hair, the place where she has a part. And she's like, oh, I'm balding starting in this area. Yeah. What do I do? And so we suggested Rogaine. And I guess there's another suggestion. Let me pull it up.
You can find also in some like beauty supply stores or like grocery stores, like more natural herbal, like just shampoos that kind of, I don't know if those actually
work.
Yeah.
I don't know. My grandma, even though she lost hair, she just dyed her hair still.
You know, maybe to make sure it looks like thicker, there's more. With more color.
Yeah, this is so funny. I'm just looking at my the picture that my sister sent. But she just had a baby, so I guess that's common for
hair. Either you get more hair or you lose hair a lot and it fluctuates. But I guess at least Butterfly, know that you're not alone. There's a lot of women dealing with these issues.
Yeah, that's so funny that you brought it up. Yeah, hair loss at 30.
You know, one thing I think would be kind of fun, though, like, I would love to try on wigs.
Oh.
Right? So it's like, that's also an excuse for you to, like, try different hairstyles without spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right? So if maybe when I hit that hair loss time, I'm going to try on different wigs.
Or extensions? You can.
Oh, yeah.
But she had maybe a second... that damages your hair more. I don't know.
Well, she had a second part. And do you mind if your guy is bald? Janet, do you mind if your guy is bald? I had to ask you that.
I would prefer.
She prefers that. Hair everywhere yeah. so that she can groom it to her liking.
Wait, question that. Okay, spin-off question. Would you rather have a guy who is balding but has a few strands he wants to keep? Or just, you know what? Just go bald.
Yeah. No, I'd rather you just go bald. That's true. I've seen some men rock the bald look very well. So I would say, yeah, it's like not a thing that I like look for, but I would, if everything else worked well and he rocked the bald look, that could work.
So wait, super hairy or super bald?
Ooh, like a lot of body hair, you mean?
Yeah.
Actually, I think bald then. Like if the trade-off is like you have hair all over your body and everywhere.
Yeah, I'd be bald too. Or,
yeah,
bald.
I think I'd rather date someone who's bald and like well-groomed in other places.
But what if you can groom the hairiness? It's too much effort.
But then you have to do it over and over.
She knows. Yeah. She had to trim a rug. God.
Well, thank you guys so much for sending in your questions. This is a lot of fun for us to do. We'll definitely have to do more of these.
Maybe you can do like a live stream one day.
Ooh. It'll be a nice challenge. No editing ability.
Oh, shit.
We actually did hit a lot of serious topics today. So we do plan on elaborating more on these topics in our future seasons. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, and keep them coming. It's fun reading all of your comments and interacting with you guys. It's like, oh, we're building a little community out here of ABGers and ABBers.
Yes. Send us more emails with questions or your thoughts at AsianBossGirl@gmail.com. And also subscribe to us on iTunes, ABG Asian Boss Girl. We'll just appear in your feed. Leave us a review too if you're enjoying this.
Yeah. All right. See you guys on the next episode.
Bye.